And I'll speak very close to the microphone, and so Ball would turn up the volume so it doesn't give too much feedback. And you'll listen very carefully, and we'll work together, and maybe something will be transmitted. And who knows, maybe my voice will come back tomorrow. I don't think so. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I decided to speak this evening on something that we touched on during the weekend when Dravida was here, but he and I spent some time discussing the similarities and differences of bhakti yoga and buddhi yoga. In many cases, they're used interchangeably. Buddhi yoga means bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga means buddhi yoga. In one sense, they're synonymous, but obviously there's some distinction. Otherwise, you wouldn't have two terms. There's some distinction. So that's our topic this evening. Not exhaustive, because those of you that were with us for that this New Year's weekend or some other time that you've had Dravida's association, his middle name is Slokaraj. Dravida Slokaraj Das. So just, it's such a nice association, just taking prasadam together. Dravida, can you recite some slokas or think of some slokas that touch on this topic? And you'll hear this medley of slokas, and then taking each word apart and holding it up, and then this word fits with that word, and then he sings it and gives a poeticized translation and Prabhupada's purport. And then I'll go to another one. And he's astounding. I didn't have a recording, so I'm just going to cover one verse, and from there a few verses. 10:10 Bhagavad Gita. It's the third of the Chatur Shloki verses of Bhagavad Gita. The Chatur Shloki verses means the four essential verses that has all the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Everything is within those four verses. Just unpack it, or at least the essence of it is there. And the others are expanding on that essence. So without looking at your book, does anybody know the verse and would like to recite it into the microphone? Prahlad, you're going to recite it? You know the verse? Yes. Over here, these two brahmacharis.
Tasham satatayuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam tadami buddhi yogantam yenamam upayantite.
You recite it.
Tesham satayuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam tadami buddhi yogantam yenamam upayantite.
So let's, you know the verse, Paramakrun. He doesn't need a microphone. He's a very powerful man. Go ahead. So let's all chant it together. Those of you that know it. Desham satyutanam vajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenam amupayantite. In this verse, Krishna describes a very, very, very important feature of how he reciprocates with those who become fixed in their devotional service. Because devotional service is a relationship, meaning it's two ways. It's not just something we do. It's something we do. But it's also the mood with which we do it, and there's a relationship with Krishna where he reciprocates not only with what we do, but with the mood with which we do it. It's called love. And in that love relationship, we engage in service. Krishna accepts that service. And Krishna reciprocates with the service that we render by many ways, but one of them, 10:10 is describing, he gives buddhi. So let's go back a bit. How does one become so qualified that Krishna will give that to you? A little bit more. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he says that this buddhi can't be achieved any other way. There isn't any other process. There isn't any other source than Krishna himself. And there isn't another recipient besides Krishna's devotee. It's a franchise. It's an exclusive franchise that only those that meet certain criterion can be the recipients of. And then they in turn can give it. That's the other part of the franchise. Buddhi, what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, what Krishna says in the verse, it's the intelligence by which one can come to him, which sets it quite apart from material intelligence. Material intelligence is what our modern education can provide you. Essentially, to understand the laws of matter and how to manipulate the push and pull, the cause and effect of the laws of matter, to gain something that looks like happiness or looks like an object that you can exploit to get happiness, and that's material intelligence. Spiritual intelligence is quite different. We can use material intelligence, the ability to discriminate the cause and the effect of things, in Krishna's service. We do it all the time. As devotees, we do it all the time. We're not advised to not do that. We're advised to do that guided by the spirit of giving to Krishna the fruits of those activities initially, and then changing the purpose from aspiring for happiness by the senses contacting objects in a particular configuration, instead to the objects are the property of Krishna and they're meant for Krishna's enjoyment, and have our intelligence guided that way. So let's go back. That's 10:10. Tadami means give. Buddhiyogam tam. Tam is the pronoun. Unto that person who does what the first part of the verse says. Just engage in devotional service with feelings of love for Krishna. Not just the activity, but the feelings of love accompanying that activity. When Krishna sees that, then he gives this Bodhi Yoga. And this Bodhi Yoga, Vishwanath says, it guides the activities of the mind. It's really simple. Supposing you see a shirt or a glove or a pair of socks. There's a pair of socks on the floor. But you put your foot inside and wiggle your toes and the sock starts to move. Or you put your hand in the glove and you wiggle your fingers and the glove starts to move. You put your arms into the shirt and move your arms and the shirt starts to move. The mind, when things are in proper order, gives direction to the senses. Spiritual intelligence, buddhi, gives direction to the mind. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to tell your mind, don't go there, go here only, and the mind does that? That's buddhi. Should I say it again? Vishwanath says, buddhi gives direction to the mind. Say it the converse. If you don't have buddhi, you can't give direction to your mind. You can try. But at best, it's occasional. More likely, it's quite inconsistent, and more likely, it's hardly ever. Because the mind is, according to the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, it's one of the sitting places of lust. The mind, and then the senses. And it doesn't have just to be male-female lust. It can be the desire to be the enjoyer of matter, whatever your favorite variety is. Vanilla, chocolate, or strawberry, whatever your favorite flavor is. The mind has that attraction, and then the senses go there. There's no spiritual intelligence at all. Like an animal. Prabhupada was very blunt about it. A society that's minus God consciousness is an animal civilization. It's driven by, just, you know, being blunt about it, it's driven by sense gratification. And what's the purpose of fruitive activities? Passion, lust. It's to generate objects that you can enjoy. That's fruitive activities. There's no spiritual intelligence at all. So back to the verse. Krishna is the director, the giver, and the director of buddhi. And to whom does he give buddhi? To those who have bhakti. Who are those who have bhakti? Well, in verse 8, Krishna says, those who have bhakti, those who understand that everything comes from Krishna. I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. Iti matva bhajante maham. Those persons engage in my devotional service. Buddha. There's the word again. The same root word is buddhi. Buddha. Bhava. Samandita. They experience, their activities are guided by buddhi, and they experience a happiness that's beyond the modes of nature. Now what's that like? Well, you can describe it, or you can read about it, but you'll never know until you engage in devotional service. You can read a travel brochure that says this is what Vaikuntha is like. But it's unimaginable, a life with no anxiety. What's that? You know, a lobotomy. Just, you know, take your nervous system out of your body and then you don't feel anything. That's not what it is. It's a positive happiness. That's what comes later in Vishwanath's commentary. Krishna gives that. It's not exactly even that Krishna gives it. It's by associating with Krishna, one feels it. In other words, like you stand next to a fire and you feel warm. You stand next to a fire and you feel warm. There's warmth coming from the fire is heat and it gives heat, just like the soul is conscious and consciousness. A flame is luminous and it illumines other things. When we associate with Krishna, we experience buddhi and bhava. We experience our original condition of chit and ananda because we identify with the sat aspect and we're part of the supreme sat, the supreme truth. We're meant for engaging in service to the supreme truth, proportionate to that submission, intelligence is given. Proportionate to that submission, spiritual happiness is given. There's a verse that precedes that one that says a lot too. In fact, it's a few verses. Because the whole what's the title of chapter 10 in Sanskrit? What is it in English? Chapter 10. Opulences of the Absolute. Opulences of the Absolute. So in Sanskrit it's Vibhuti. Opulences of the Absolute. Vibhuti Yoga. Here's what Baladev says. Please bear with me. What I want to do is describe the connection between buddhi and bhakti. That's our topic. Buddhi is awarded to one who has bhakti. How do you get bhakti? It's not just by putting on tilak and a sari or a dhoti. It's something that's inside. Vibhuti is a very particular Sanskrit word. I've been discussing this a bit here and there, but this is kind of like a package just on the topic. Vibhuti is a term that appears in chapter 3 of Canto 1, Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapter 3 is primarily, largely, it's a response to one of the six questions asked in chapter 1 by the sages. Forms of the Lord as they appear in this world, can you please describe them? That's the question. The answer? The Purusha avatars, forms of Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu, they're identified. And then the avatars of Vishnu, so many are listed, principal ones. Krishna is the source of all of them, that important verse. Chapter 3. And then going on, Vibhuti is also mentioned because that's a form of the Lord that appears in this world. That was the question. And that's what the whole chapter 10 is. Vibhutis, Vibhuti Yoga. After Krishna speaks those Chaturshloki verses, what does Arjuna say? He said, you're the personality of Godhead. I was thinking differently. Please excuse me. I thought you're my friend. He is Krishna's friend, and Krishna is his friend. But the divinity of Krishna is now being revealed in chapter 10. So he asks Krishna ways by which I can always remember you. Yeah? So Krishna gives ways by which Arjuna can always remember him. He describes his vibhutis. And those vibhutis, he says, they're me. In one sense, it's also correct to say they are energies of Krishna, or they're superlative manifestations of Krishna in this world through his superlative potencies. Of mountains, I'm the Himalayas. Of fishes, I'm the shark. Of horses, I am Airavata. Or excuse me, elephants, I'm Airavata. Uttaishrava, of horses, and so on, and so on. He's the best of the best. That's what vibhutis are. Now, in the early parts of chapter 10, Krishna gives a whole list of things and says, these are my vibhutis. Then he says, one who understands this with faith, having understood this from me, the son of Vasudev, that it's true, and with faith one lives one's life accordingly, to that person they become fixed in devotional service. There's steady and unsteady devotional service. To come to steady devotional service, commonly from the teachings of Rupa Goswami, we discussed it at length over New Year's holiday. We have to go beyond the impurities of heart, anarta nivritti. Here's another explanation that says the same thing, just in a different way. Saying the same thing in a different way is, we have to understand that all things that are opulent or attractive, objects of the senses, something out there in that the field that the senses extend from the conscious soul inside, that's Krishna. It's Krishna and Krishnas simultaneously. That means it's meant for his enjoyment. One who knows that, they'll be very fixed in their devotional service. So unfixed means we don't see that connection. And not seeing that connection, what do? Well, you contemplate enjoying one of those things in such a manner it can become yours, or at least an object of your enjoyment. Not an object of Krishna's enjoyment, because it's his. That's godlessness. And godlessness, once again, it's animal life. It can be polished animal life, but it's animal life. The distinction between animal life and human life is this one thing. Suras and asuras. The divine and demoniac is just seeing everything in relation to Krishna. That's text 8. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. But just even the vibhutis, of all things, the superlative of all things, those are Krishna's vibhutis. They're his. They're his opulences, they're his, they're for his enjoyment. So we don't covet the property of somebody else. You're a thief. Or at least envious. If you don't act upon it, go try to steal it. The heart is contaminated by envy. I want to make it mine. It shouldn't be Krishna's, or whoever, somebody that Krishna has entrusted some opulence to. It shouldn't be theirs. It should be mine. Contamination of heart. That's anarta nivritti. So knowledge alone is not enough. We can know these things and do something else. But bhakti, what's the meaning of bhakti? Very simple. It's senses, engaged in the object of the senses for the pleasure of the master of the senses. It's practical activity in this world, in the mood, exactly as Krishna says in the 10:10. Priti purvakam, with feelings. So bhakti is a feeling, but it's far more than a feeling. Many people I heard Radhika Raman give a very nice explanation that scholars of Bhagavad Gita often translate bhakti as devotion. Consistently, Prabhupada used another term, devotional service, because it means practical activity. The feeling is there, but bhakti is not a sentimental exercise or sentimental movement. It's practical activity. Senses extending into the field of the object of the senses, recognizing that's Krishna's. Just like simple example Prabhupada gives, if you're a servant of the king and you're in the king's palace, you don't attempt to make the property of the king yours or act as if it's yours. You're in big trouble if you do that. And not only the palace of the king, but the kingdom. Not just so you don't get punished, but the reality is it's, you know, from a temporal perspective, it's the property of the king. From a spiritual perspective, everything is the property of God. That's Ishopanishad. Isavashamidam sarvam. Do you know that verse? No. Chat kincha jagatyam jagat. Tena chaktena bunjitaha. Ma gridaha kasya swidhanam. Same advice of Ishopanishad. Krishna is the proprietor. We accept things that are allotted for us as our quota, and not more than that, knowing well it's actually all, even our quota is the property of the source of it, but we're accepting it as our necessities for maintenance, and the rest is for other persons who the Supreme Lord is also maintaining. We don't take more than that. One who lives that way can live happily for a long time. So bhakti. What is it's practical activity? Recognizing the proprietorship of the person from whom this energy out there has come. Including this energy even in here. This the soul, the conscious self. That's not mine either. That's Krishna's marginal potency. I belong to Krishna. I'm Krishna's. And that out there is also Krishna's. One who knows that perfectly engages in my devotional service. And then they feel something. They feel a spiritual happiness, bhava. They're guided by spiritual intelligence that Krishna gives them. That's text 8. And then what do you do when you're in that consciousness? You get together with others and you discuss topics of Krishna. Kathayantas chamam nityam tushyanticha ramanticha. And so the relationships are established in those terms. Tushyanticha ramantita. In relation to Krishna topics. In relation to Krishna topics certainly can mean discussing Bhagavad Gita. There's a devotee in New York, I'll not mention his name because he might get embarrassed. I can count on it. As soon as I get my seatbelt fastened, he's got a Bhagavad Gita question. He's not a big scholar. He's not a pundit, Brahmin, devotee, but he's a thoughtful devotee. And he reads Bhagavad Gita and he's thinking, what does this mean? How does that together fit together with that? He's a very simple man. Always thinking of Krishna and the message of Krishna, how to understand it. But it can also mean, you know, practical things like whatever. And I have a nice arrangement for prasadam for all the guests that are coming on Friday night. Or how to arrange for a warm place for all of you to stay. And that's practical activity, and you're serving the devotees. And if the consciousness is not there's some material, the point is, there may be some material aspect of what we do. You know, how to get people picked up at the airport and how many cases of vegetables to buy and all of those, you know, how to get them delivered or who's going to go pick them up or making practical arrangements. That's part of the bhakti process. That's not material. If you're understanding who you are and who Krishna is, it's part of your life of devotion to Krishna. There may be, for each person, a different set of things that we do. And that's perfectly natural. So, but that's what devotees do when they get together, as they consider ways of pleasing Krishna together. And specifically also chanting his name and hearing his glories and seeing his deity form and hearing the descriptions of devotees and their ecstasy of exchanges with Krishna in his pastimes that are recorded in scripture and so on. The mind just becomes filled with those things. They become filled with those things by hearing those things, and they're so attractive. The mind just naturally wants to go to those things. So then comes text 10. When Krishna sees that, Desham Satata Yuktanam. Yukta means practice or engagement. When one is always engaged in that way, with great feelings of love for me, I give them buddhi. I give the intelligence by which they can come to me. And that in practical terms, that means 24/7. Not just when you're in the temple room. In other words, the teaching is not a secular teaching. There's something that you do when you have the worship part of your day, and there's something else that you do when it's not the worship part of your day. The intelligence guides all your activities, all your practical activities, in such a way it will help you get to Krishna. Now Krishna gives that to those who want to come to him. Even specifically, Vishwanath says, he appears within the mind. He gives his darshan, and directly he gives instruction. Now that's, of course, an advanced stage of bhakti, but whether Krishna is giving his darshan in such a way that you as a spirit soul can see him in his spiritual form, or as Paramatma, he's giving intelligence to guide your activity in such a way, all the complexities that we're involved with in the course of our lives, to get to Krishna. That's a special gift. Krishna wants to give the message of Bhagavad Gita is, Krishna wants to give that. And he wants us to be ready to receive it. So we have to qualify ourselves. So we practice, but not just the behavior part, but the consciousness part. Specifically, the hankering, the eagerness, take it further, and greed for being with Krishna. Being with Krishna doesn't mean this place is crazy, let me out of here, because this place is also Krishna's. We can see the opportunity of being where we are as an opportunity for service to Krishna, and inwardly cultivating our desire to be with Krishna. One who cultivates like that, Krishna gives the intelligence out to come to him. And of course, that's also in stages, within the stages of bhakti, proportionate to what we can handle, proportionate to our maturity of desire. But from Krishna's side, there's no limit. Especially the followers. He's so cute. He's got a little halo. He's just adjusting his halo. Hare Krishna. I got distracted by his halo. I just forgot what I was talking about. Yeah, I think that one of the reasons that inspired me to speak on this subject, besides Dravida's association, was this. Attracting souls to begin the process of Krishna consciousness is part of our life. At the same time, those souls that have started the practice of Krishna consciousness need very clear indicators how to go the next step, the next step, and the next step. We had one of the retreats we had in Giranagari. The theme was acceptance and progress. Remember that? So being honest and realistic about this is where I am, and making the next step, next step. In part, it's from a teaching of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that says we should always be ready, willing, and eager to make the next step, not prematurely, not capriciously. But if we don't have that eagerness to progress, then we're not going to advance towards the goal. If we want to advance towards the goal, we should have a clear idea of what the next step is while we're maintaining the present step. Not, in other words, continue looking forward. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says it in reverse. A Vaishnava is never thinking simply on the past. They're thinking where they're going. The past, we can learn from the past, but don't live in the past. We're very clear what our goal is, and we're making steps towards that goal. Not impulsively or, unsustainably, but making steps towards the goal. So this topic of buddhi complements the topic of bhakti, because bhakti is the practical activities that we do, and then there's the consciousness behind the practical activities that we do. That's that we do it for Krishna, and we consistently do that in the mood to try to please Krishna to try to please our founder Acharya, to try to please the Vaishnavas. We're inconsistent, but at least having that desire to please like that. Then Krishna gives this intelligence that will guide your mind, which then in turn guides your senses. It guides your life. We become moved by the buddhi that Krishna gives. Then the feelings grow. Not artificially, prematurely, or imitatingly. I want such and such feelings. It's silly. It's a natural process. We demonstrate to Krishna that we genuinely, truly want to be in our relationship with Him, serving Him. And we're very clear why. Not just because I want out of that crazy place. I want to be with Him. Not just liberationist, salvationist kind of thing. I want to be with Him. And as that wanting to please Him through my activities grows, Krishna is the giver of that very special intelligence. And everything becomes guided. You know, the life of our founder Acharya, again and again and again, hearing the description of his activities, just how spontaneously, incredibly brilliant he handled different situations. The stories are so many. Because he was guided with Krishna, guided by Krishna. Krishna was always guiding his senses and his words. And that wasn't an accident. Or again, Vishnu says, it can't come in any other way. It can't come to any other person or from any other source. It's the reciprocation from Krishna when he sees this quality. And he gives it. In one sense, here's a question. Someone might say, well, if Krishna can give that, why doesn't he give it to everybody and take everybody back home, back to Godhead? Because they'll say no. Or they'll take something so valuable and use it in the wrong way. They don't want it. So the wanted part is to be in not only doing the activities of bhakti, but growing the desire to please Krishna through those activities, and we understand we're pleasing Krishna through our activities by pleasing the representatives of Krishna through our activities. And it's not a one day or one week or one month or one year. It's ongoing, sustained living our lives for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna standard. Buddhi is awarded. How to go to Krishna. So the message is an impetus to go the next step, whatever the position is. I'll just end with this. I was thinking in particular, because I knew it would happen, when in discussing the Anartanavritti topic over and over and over again, at least in the past, I've experienced people become anartha conscious instead of Krishna conscious. Oh, I have all these defects, consciousness. Instead of the means of achieving perfection is through bhakti, and these are some obstacles, so let me know clearly what the obstacles are in my path of bhakti so I can address them carefully in the proper means. Anyway, this is clearly in the positive note, something to directly cultivate. The essence, I'm going to be describing some more of it, but the essence of this is nourished just by the hearing process. That's our lives. Of course, hearing in kirtan, hearing the description of Krishna's wonderful pastimes. There's potencies in these pastimes. There's potencies in his name. There's potencies in the Bhagavad Gita. That's why it has endured for so long. There's the immense potencies, and the immense potencies are released, and the stored potencies are released and experienced just by proper discussion from those that are eager to hear and understand. So it's a very special opportunity that Prabhupada gave us to go the next step, the next step, the next step. Begin the path of bhakti and keep going. Tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upiyanti te, so that you can reach Krishna. Okay, any comments or questions? I'm sorry for my voice. Let's see what happens in tomorrow morning. Subal first.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. You mentioned that spiritual intelligence is the only way to control the mind. Is that quoting you correctly?
Not exactly what I said. Spiritual intelligence has the function of giving direction to the mind. Mm. Now, one can control the mind in an artificial way, but it's not sustainable.
Mm. Okay.
By austerities and so forth and so on, one can get better control of the mind. But that's limited and temporary.
And that spiritual intelligence, buddhi, is obviously not the same type of intelligence that is described in buddhi on 7-4. The eight material elements.
Correct.
And one more question in terms of intelligence to just clarify this point. The prayer of Lord Brahma, Janiera Vindaksha Bimukta Maninasa, the Abhishuddha Buddhaya, that although is describing the impersonalist who fall down, so only spiritual intelligence is the one that can give that sustainable.
Yeah. Let's do this. Thank you for asking that clarification. Sanskrit words have different shades of meaning depending upon the application or the circumstance that they're being used. Just like Atma. It can be the body, it can be the mind, it can be the soul. In some cases even it means the Supreme Soul, depending upon the application. And other words similarly. So buddhi can, its ultimate meaning is this one. Context-wise, it can mean this one, or it can even mean that one. As in 7-4. It's certainly not the spiritual intelligence, not one of the eight material elements. The eight material elements are already there, and Krishna has to directly give this other kind of buddhi. It's another kind. That kind of buddhi that takes one to Krishna. That spiritual intelligence. Or yasyatma buddhi kunapetri dhatuke. Jivana Jivana, you have something?
Thank you. Gurmaj, when Krishna said dadami buddhi yogam tam, that intelligence that he's providing, that spiritual intelligence, from your class it seemed that that's primarily from within Krishna speaking, and you quoted Vishwanatha Chakri Thakur commenting, for the advanced devotee, Krishna appears in the mind of the devotee and directs the devotee.
Yeah.
I've heard you speak about the word matva in two verses earlier in text 8. Iti matva bhajante mam. So, My understanding is that matva is hearing from spiritual master or devotees of the connection of all things in relation to Krishna. So my question is that the distinction between matva, that kind of matva versus the knowing that Krishna gives us of how to direct our life? Or simply put, what's the distinction between that matva and dadami buddhi yogam tam?
It's your question is subtle. It's language. It's not unimportant, but it's it's like realized knowledge that is matva, and buddhi is what directs that realized knowledge in practical ways. These are, you know, this is Krishna's temple. Now, how do I conduct myself in Krishna's temple? And here's a particular circumstance in Krishna's temple. How do I conduct myself in this particular circumstance in Krishna's temple? One is matva and the other is buddhi.
How does one recognize Krishna speaking, or what is the experience of Krishna giving one understanding directly within one's own mind or within one's own intelligence?
Gee, what's it like to be a self-realized soul? I think it's fair to say, similar to the response that I gave to Subal about linguistics or language, similarly the realization will be different according to the consciousness of the experiencer. I can think of some anecdotal things where Bhakti Mitch was picking me up at the airport. There's a lot of traffic, so we were having some conversation. And he described his experience when he first received Bhagavad Gita. He didn't know what it was, but somehow something clicked. And he said, the events, I didn't ask him for the detail, but the events that preceded that and the events that followed that, although he had not had a devotee association, had some intuitive understanding Krishna was directing all this, and reflecting back on it, Krishna was directing all of this. And I think we all have some experience of that, maybe on a lesser platform. I'll just share something anecdotal. I went to school at the State University of New York at Buffalo. There were two friends. They wanted to visit Boston. And I was already thinking, I'd like to look at some graduate schools in Boston. So we got in a car and went from Buffalo to Boston, and yada, yada, yada all the way. It wasn't Krishna. yada, yada, yada. And then they had a friend that had a loft in Boston, and I got a back room, and on the windowsill of the back room were Jagannath deities. And I knew that what Jagannath deities were, because at the Buffalo Center there's Jagannath deities. So I said, this is a sign from Krishna. I should go to the temple while I'm here. And there's a, you know, I wasn't really fond of the Buffalo Temple because of certain personalities that were there. I kind of like, but I went anyways because sign from Krishna. And when I went there, it was this amazing experience without all the details. Just like Krishna arranged the whole thing. Now, what was my understanding of that? That Krishna was arranging the whole thing? Very little, but something. And then, so what's the experience, what's it like when you, it depends on, you know, how covered and how, on the other end, how eager you are to be in association with Krishna. Then it can be an obstacle. And the obstacle is another, Krishna's hand is directly in this. And then, you know, just keep going. You know, become Prahlad Maharaj. Or one of the associates of Prahlad Maharaj and watch all of that happen. So it's the experience, something like, in response to your question, in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, part one, there's Narada's search for the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. And he keeps going to greater and greater and greater and greater and greater. Finally, Sanatana Goswami in his own commentary says they're all perfect. Just degrees. Perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So similar to you. What's it like? Degrees. And sometimes, you know, the unsteady bhakti, we're sometimes more aware, sometimes less aware, commonly less aware. But there are some moments when we're keenly aware. And it doesn't have to be good times, or it doesn't have to be bad times. You can just be more keenly aware. What's that like? You know, it's proportionate to our consciousness being connected to Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you're describing about how the Buddhi Yoga is given by Krishna. Buddhi is given by Krishna. So in chapter number 4, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is describing different kinds of yagya, dravya yagya, yoga yagya, and the Jnana Yagna is considered as better compared to all the yagyas. So let's say if the person is doing the devotional service externally with no inner consciousness, and he doesn't want to develop inner consciousness, he's just doing externally everything. So what will be the situation of that person?
What's the position?
What will be the situation of that person?
What is the situation? What is the position? Mm-hmm. He's an external. I mean, exactly as you said, that's what he is. It's mechanical. That's what is the situation of that person? He's doing something mechanical. And, or but, there's some degree of submission. Otherwise he'd be doing something else instead of that. There's some degree of submission. Just accepting the standards of whatever that system is that they're following, whatever the sacrifice system that they're following, there's some submission. So Krishna sees that. And that's the elevating principle. Even if it's just external, no inner consciousness. Something. There's everyone does something to get something. So it'll get me something. I'm doing this because it'll get me something, whatever that something is that they want. Relief or piety, so for something. But even, you know, beneath all that, there's some faith in some higher authority. This is going to be good for me for whatever the reason, whatever the motivation. Elevation of some kind. Commonly karma khanda. Maybe jnana khanda. Okay. Anything on the ladies' side? Yes?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Like right now on a theoretical platform, I do understand that I am a part and parcel of Krishna and I should be serving Him. So my question is, how can I have this clarity of the goal and deepen this goal inside with real feeling that really I want to serve Him, because all these four verses are following each other, so I need to have that clarity of goal.
Well, the how-to is Bhagavad Dharma or Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu brings Smaranam. That constant remembrance is the natural consequence or byproduct of hearing and chanting done as you just described, with that least theoretical understanding and the wish to be connected with that in a more permanent way than in a theoretical way. So the seed is the faith. The knowledge is guiding that faithful activity, and then there's the hearing done in that qualitative way. It will grow. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Think about it. 1 year ago or 2 years ago, what were your thoughts occupied with compared to what your thoughts are occupied with today? A different set of things. I mean, not altogether different, but significantly different set of things. At least thinking of those things that you do. The cooking and family and, you know, what you do with your discretionary time and what you do with your money and what you do with your family members. The contemplation has changed. And it's changed because of the hearing and chanting and association. And, you know, and good guidance from persons that themselves are really clear and wish to share that clarity with other, with you and with others. So that association is most valuable to get to what your question is hankering for. Beyond the theoretical into the practical and sustained practical Krishna consciousness. It's exactly on the topic that I wanted to address. So thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Devotees, they gain knowledge and they will be detached from the material things and they get attached to Krishna and then they come to the stage of prema bhakti.
That was pretty quick. Congratulations.
So, I mean, where the question, I mean, my, I mean, intuition is saying that they get attached to Krishna and then they love Krishna. The love arises from that. With the attachment, love comes. But how does Krishna loves his devotees without any attachment to them? I mean, he is a renouncer, right? I mean, he is, one of his opulence is a renunciation. So, he is not...
I think I understand. The way you're asking your question is very interesting. But I think I do understand the question. Where does, in Krishna's case, one of his six opulences is renunciation. So if he has love for his devotees who love him, where's the place of detachment, one of Krishna's six opulences, in his loving relationships with his devotees? Is that what your question is?
Right, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
Well, there's the material kind of renunciation, and there's the spiritual kind of renunciation. So within Krishna, there is no material kind of renunciation. That is to say, he is not deriving happiness from an object outside of himself. That, you know, he's Atma Rama. You know the meaning. He's satisfied within himself. He's not needing something. In fact, is there something outside of Krishna? No. He's not needing anything outside of himself. In that sense, he's detached or renounced. That's the spiritual kind of renunciation. On the other hand, Krishna is, as Queen Kunti puts it, she's the resolution of all opposites. He's renounced, at the same time, he's attached. He's feeling the feelings of love of his devotees. He reciprocates with those feelings of love of his devotees. He's controlled by the love of his devotees. He's attached by their attachment to him. Which looks like, hey, wait a minute. But it's the realm of transcendental love. It's not attachment like we know. We don't even know what love is in the absolute sense. I mean, we have a notion of it, but we... So even when Krishna, give him the microphone. We are hearing this in Dwarka. When Krishna left Vrindavan and went to the school of Sandipani Muni after he put Ugrasena back in the throne, every night at the school of Sandipani Muni, he was speaking with Balaram about the residence of Vrindavan. That's his renunciation. He's feeling the love of his devotees. And there's nothing else. No, he has other loving devotees besides those resident in Vrindavan, and so he reciprocates with them too. He's not a stone. He's a person with transcendental feelings. But at the same time, he left Vrindavan. Or Lord Ram sent Sita to the ashram of Valmiki. It's not that he didn't have any feelings. Not that kind of renunciation. Last question over here.
Hare Krishna. Chapter number 10, when you look in the initial verses, verse number 4, 5, and 6, where Krishna is giving the different, like buddhi, intelligence, jnana, asamoham, there are certain criteria to understand him. And then, the very next verse is that Brahma, even Brahma didn't, Brahma, the
Kumar. Where are you speaking from, please, again?
Chapter number 10, Bhagavad Gita.
Chapter 10, verses 4, 5,
4, 5 and 6. Okay. Where Krishna is giving different criteria how to understand him.
Speak slowly, please.
Mm-hmm. And in the verse number 6, Krishna is saying that even Brahma, Kumaras and the sages, they don't know me.
Yeah.
Even they are born from my mind. And when I'm reading the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur for the verse number 4 and 5, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur especially mentions that even buddhi, jnana and asamohan is also not cause of bhakti to Krishna. So how can we understand this?
This goes back to Subal's question. Those terms can mean different things according to the context. So in that use of the terms, it not by the ascending process is what he's saying. And the buddhi that's described in 10.10 is the topmost stage of what real intelligence is. Real intelligence is how to go to Krishna. It's a different use of the same term.
The main criteria for bhakti.
Just like, you know, 7.4 Bhagavad Gita, buddhi is mentioned as one of the material elements. That's a particular use of the term buddhi. In these other verses, as you're describing in the context, it's ascending processes. So, buddhi in the sense of discrimination, in that sense similar to gyan. Just like, when, in Sankhya philosophy, there is the analysis of categories of matter and spirit. Now, if one is not a bhakta, that analysis of categories of matter and spirit isn't going to take one to Krishna. That's what that purport is saying. But what's Kapiladev teaching? He's not teaching anything other than bhakti. So the conclusion of all that analysis is, there's just two little statements. This leads to meditation upon Supersoul and then to unmixed devotion to Krishna. Is that, you know, boom, boom. So there's steps to get boom, boom, to get those two things accomplished. But the power of discrimination alone is not sufficient. That's what the purport is saying. So it's a different application of the same term. It's incomplete. Without devotion to Krishna. Now, your question specifically is, can devotion to Krishna can be achieved without buddhi? Well, you have to have some discrimination. But you know, it's the lower end of discrimination. The upper end of discrimination is, what's going to take me to Krishna? That's buddhi yoga, tadami buddhi yogam tam. And that's similar to 241 Bhagavad Gita. Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana. That's buddhi yoga. 10.10 and 241 are similar. And these other uses of the terms buddhi, it's, the context is different. So the import or the message conveyed by that term is different. Just like how Prabhupada uses the term karma yoga. Sometimes it's this, sometimes it's this, and sometimes it's this. The element of karma yoga is there in bhakti yoga. But without the bhakti, it's incomplete. All right. Thank you very much.